From the beginnings of people's encounters with God, they've sought to build structures that offered an encounter with the divine. In the Old Testament, holy ground was set apart as Moses removed his shoes to meet God in the burning bush, or as he covered his face as he climbed to Mount Sinai. Jacob marked and named the ground where he battled with God. The Ark of the Covenant, the physical representation of God amongst the people of Israel, was housed within a special tent as the people wandered in the wilderness, before it would finally take residence in one place where priests would care for it. And it was Solomon who finally built a beautiful temple in Jerusalem, where the people of Israel could come to worship the Most High God. As worship developed and people grew in their understanding that God was greater than a building and the community of Israel expanded, then local synagogues became focal points for education and for worship, with the temple and Jerusalem a place for pilgrimage and a focal point for particular festivals. Our church communities and buildings have grown out of the need to have a local place for those of faith to gather for worship, offer provision for Christian education, and space to accommodate community activity. Sanctuaries, the places which we worship within, give voice to the desire to encounter God within a space that engages imagination. So each sanctuary varies from the very plain to the very ornate. Windows and furnishings tell the stories of faith, and particularly for Christians, of meetings with the physical presence of Christ. Pulpits represent mountaintop storytelling. Tables tell of gathering to share food. Fonts tell of riverside baptisms. But it's not just the physical presence of a church building that allows people to encounter God. Instead, the stories of those who worship and meet in a particular place become interwoven with the Christian story. And meeting the people or the stories that each building carries can also offer imagination-spurring and soul-refreshing moments. The places that the people of God inhabit can be a source that tends the basic needs of those who are in need of support and encouragement. There will be those amongst us who come to worship, who come to this building, assured that they will encounter God, and that in that encounter, they can face the week that lies ahead. There will be those who come forlorn and broken, who hope to find a meeting point with God that encourages them to be positive. And there will be those who come because they're not sure what to do with their energy, and they're hoping to find a place to offer their service here. Of course, a building's not the only place to encounter God, and equally there are those who find that place where they feel most comfortable, acknowledging God's presence in their lives, perhaps somewhere out in the midst of creation. Those climbing to the tops of hills and mountains to experience the wonder of creation laid out before them, or those who hang out on drafty, windy Scottish beaches, that the breath of God might breathe through them and blow old patterns and thoughts away so they might be made new for the world that lies ahead. In the gap between the two services, a retired minister said to me, that nonsense you were spouting about creation. And as I stand here, I suddenly think it's not that nonsense, because that's what St. Ninian believed. That's why St. Ninian had his cave on the beach at Whithorn, because it was a place where he felt God lived and breathed. And he's not the only one. All sorts of our past saints have found God present in creation. However we encounter the living presence of God, we do so because we seek the assurance of our human presence and of our purpose for the future. In faith, we're one of two kinds of people. We're either those who need care or those who need calling. At times, we're one or the other. Sometimes we swap roles. And occasionally, we play both roles. In Isaiah this morning, we encounter words of support and encouragement, and for those who are ready, a call to the future. While in Mark's Gospel, Simon's mother-in-law is restored to her community that she might live out her calling. As we discover week upon week, we're dropped in partway through biblical texts, and so we have to try and work our way through each year's lectionary with stories almost in isolation. And that means we wonder at the setting and the purpose of each reading. I suspect that many this morning are familiar with the passage from Isaiah. It's a passage that offers comforts and support in the lives we lead. Maybe it reminds us of a hymn or a song that we sing to encourage ourselves. As I was preparing for the sermon, I found myself singing two more modern hymns, and I suspect they're not hymns that you've encountered. I don't know that you had Songs of God's People, and I had a wee flick in the hymn book just there to see if there were any mention of them. But there are two hymns that always come to mind when I read Isaiah 40, and that's Living Under the Shadow of His Wing and Those Who Wait on the Lord Shall Renew Their Strength. It's hymns like that that renew our faith. It doesn't have to be a modern hymn. It could be an old hymn and reminds us of an encounter and an encouragement. One of the reasons we sing psalms and paraphrases are that these are the things that offer support and encouragement when we're struggling with our faith. They're reminders of the presence of God in difficult times and in good times. So chapter 40 of Isaiah begins a new section of the book, bringing hope to Israel. It's thought that the person of Isaiah may well have changed, but the purpose of God communicating with his people remains the same. Life seems pretty hopeless for Israel, and for those who are read, and many of them are still captive in Babylon, while Jerusalem is ruined. The language of withering and fading suggests the people's dispirited mood. The prophet, however, points them back to God. Those who hear the words of the prophet are reminded of the God that they've encountered throughout the history of their shared journey with the living God, Lord. Of course, prophecy is not about foreseeing the future. It's instead of reminding people of how God has responded to the need of people in the past, so that they might recognise his workings in the present. One of the commentaries says, in the midst of history, particularly one marked by turmoil, change and emerging events, Second Isaiah advocates waiting, not as a neutral activity, but waiting with hope for optimistic results because God acts in history. For those who needed the assurance that they had not been abandoned by God, the reminders were there to be seen in past experience. For those who needed to hear the call to rise up and serve, the presence of God in the activity of life was to be grasped as the impetus to progress the plans. In Mark's Gospel, as we encounter Simon's mother-in-law, we have a tendency to underplay the fever that she's experiencing. With our modern world understanding of medicine, a fever is usually dealt with quite easily, and people could be back getting on with life relatively easily. However, in biblical times, illness is not something trivial. Sarah Henrich writes, illness bore a heavy social cost. Not only would a person be unable to earn a living or contribute to the well-being of a household, but their ability to take up their proper role in the community, to be honoured as a valuable member of a household, town or village, would be taken from them. Peter's mother-in-law is an excellent case in point. It was her calling and her honour to show hospitality to guests in her home. cut off from that role by an illness, cut off from doing that which integrated her into her world. Who was she when no longer able to engage in her calling? Jesus restored her to her social world and brought her back to a life of value by freeing her from that fever. It's very important to see that healing is about restoration to community and restoration of a calling, a role as well as restoration to life. For life without community and calling is bleak indeed. The gospel uses illness as an example of what might rob us of feeling that we can contribute to a community. Yet there are other ways in which we can feel adrift from the presence of God. It could be illness, but it could equally be our feelings of not being valued because of our working status or our sexuality or our age or our gender. It may be because of events that are going on within our homes as we worry about friends and family members. The gospel story reminds us that at these times, Christ appears amongst those who know of us and those who love us. Perhaps even amongst those who walk into our lives once and once only. And in those moments, brings us back into the community. It perhaps surprises us that once well, Simon's mother-in-law gets up and gets on with serving those who've come to visit. Surely, having just recovered, she should have been encouraged to take a seat, put her feet up, and allow others to care for her. It's important that we recognise that we are being shown an example of what being restored by God inspires within those who meet the living Christ. The Greek word diakonio, that's been translated as served in our translations, is the word that Jesus uses to describe his own ministry. He uses it in Mark chapter 10, verse 45, as he tells the disciples that the Son of Man has come to serve rather than be served. Simon's mother-in-law, rather than presenting the unliberated role of women, instead represents the first example of what it means to understand restoration to community living. It's an example of understanding that's met again in the woman at the well as she serves Jesus with water. The word diakonio is not a word that we encounter in the practice of the disciples, as they time and time again fail to understand how God in Jesus seeks to restore all people to his love and to their place within community living. It can sometimes feel hard going being a Church of Scotland member, or even someone of faith, as there's much that knocks at what we understand of God outside the doors. The values that have sustained us, our families and the communities we are part of, are swiped at, sometimes by those who do not want to dialogue with what it is we encounter in faith. Of course, it's not helpful that we're also very good at undermining ourselves with negatives. We focus on the negatives. It's human nature. We like to look at falling numbers and the changing role of the church. And you know, that can make even the most positive person downhearted. Every so often, I take the opportunity to enjoy lunch with someone I trust and whose faith has inspired me since childhood. And whenever I meet that person, I come away changed by that encounter. It's good to look through their eyes at the life of the church and the people of faith. It's good to tell them about what happens and the events of parish life, and to allow them to review them, to see them in new and inspiring ways. There's a moment of restoration, a reminder that God is with us. In all of our lives, there are people and places that allow the love of God shown in Christ to meet us in the barriers that keep us caught from being part of a faithful community. In the voice of another, the space of a building, the wonder of creation, we are drawn back into our relationship with God that reminds us of our place in the kingdom he has promised. However, in reminding us of our wholeness in God's community, we are also reminded of our purpose. A purpose that asks us to allow Christ to shine from us in the service we undertake. In our church building in which we gather to be refreshed and restored, we have a physical sign of our desire to offer a presence of God to our parish and our community. We hope others will wander in and meet the presence of God that we've felt in this place. We hope that they'll leave refreshed for their next part of their journey. And who knows, maybe they'll return again. But perhaps they'll also take what we know of God and share it with others. Yet the simplest form of offering others the opportunity to encounter Christ in their lives is when we're willing to serve, to allow Christ to work through us in the gifts we've been given so that others are refreshed. Because we are the creation. We are the temples. We are the worship spaces that God inhabits. And through us and in us, he marks history so that others might see him at work in the world, present today. Amen.